If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Truth will You've been listening to Elefante from Pigeons Playing Ping Pong's latest album, Perspective, out now wherever you buy and stream music. You gotta dig everything about Pigeons Playing Ping Pong. They are fun, have amazing shows, and are supremely talented. Though their music is based in funk, they explore a lot more sonic territory in what seems like an effortless way. Like many of the bands in our community, the pandemic meant the Pigeons were grounded for almost 2 years. The band, though, used the time to create more great music and have just released their sixth album, Perspective. So I caught up with frontman Greg Ormont and guitarist Jeremy Sean to talk about the record and a whole lot more.
Gotta tell you, having listened to Perspective now a few times, it is probably your most comprehensive album to date. Would you agree with that assessment, Greg?
You know, I think each album we're trying to continue to improve and try to incorporate all the different sounds we make live. Being in the jam scene, the jams really take us in a lot of different directions, and sometimes it's a fun challenge to try to bottle that all up into one studio album while still making it all sound cohesive track to track. And it's something that we love doing, and I'm very proud of Perspective. I think it covers a lot of sonic territory.
Jeremy, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm super proud of this album. You know, I think it's definitely our best release to date. You know, a lot of the time went into it. We did not rush anything on this album. You know, we had a pandemic to work on it. And, you know, the one positive there was, you know, we had time. You know, we weren't bouncing between shows, finding a day here and there to get things done. You know, we actually were able to somewhat focus on it in like a more direct manner than we were used to.
Let's talk a bit about the pandemic, because you guys are a live band. You need to be out on the road. It's been 2 years since you've really been able to really get out there and do the touring that you guys do. And it's also been 2 years since you put out a record. In that time, did you know that you were going to put this record together? Was that the goal, or was it that you were all, you know, the four of you were sitting at home not doing much and figured you needed to do a new record?
I think one big thing is, you know, we absolutely were planning on recording an album. You know, what we initially might have planned to do in September of 2020, you know, we instead decided to jumpstart and get going on it in June of 2020. Because, I mean, we found our summer calendar canceled. You know, all of a sudden it was like, well, we were planning to wait until after the festival season, until like things were settling down after, which would have, we had an epic 2020 festival season plan.
Yeah.
But we won't have to talk about that. No, it was definitely, it was in the plans. You know, we always know, we're always like, we already know what the next album is. You know, we try to, I mean, we're constantly writing music, you know, as Greg would say as well. You know, we wrote a ton of music over the pandemic. You know, I mean, all we had was time at home, and we just found ourselves writing a lot. And we were absolutely planning on recording. You know, we got to it a little earlier, you know, which was nice. I mean, it still took us just as long. And it was a really fun process, and it was fun to just, you know, dive into it.
What's that writing process like now? Is it the four of you? Is it Greg writing lyrics? Is it Jeremy, you writing most of the stuff? Like, how does the balance go in terms of lyrics versus music versus each one of you contributing?
You know, one thing that was very interesting about our pandemic and our forced time at home, especially when we entered quarantine, is that we started using digital means of sharing music back and forth. And that has really created an explosion of creative output on our end for each of us. You know, whether one of us has an initial idea to start with, no matter who it is, we then, you know, send it around to each other, get a feel for it, and meet up in person at practice and, you know, mold that clay into a final product. And that's been kind of how we've done things for a long time. There are certain songs that come up together in the moment, but more often than not, it is one person's idea to just kind of plant the seed, and then the rest of us tend to that and have each of our voice on it, figuratively, not necessarily vocally on every song, but and that really is crucial for us because if one person's writing a song from start to finish, it can sound a little one-dimensional. But when you have our collective experiences combined together, you get Pigeons Playing Ping Pong. You get like our group result. It's funny, I mentioned it, like sometimes we do write songs together on the fly. And on this album, Surreal is a track that we actually wrote together live on stage maybe 10 years ago or close to it. It was just a very flowing jam that I felt inspired to sing on, and we had a few great chord changes that stuck. And afterwards, we went ahead and refined it and honed it in, and I wrote final lyrics and things like that. But that was a song that the four of us wrote together on the fly that made it on this album, which, again, like with the title Perspective, it seemed really fitting, not just because of all the perspective we gained as a society over the past 2 years, but also the perspective of remembering a song that we jammed on stage 10 years ago and finally hearing its final product with like added nuance a whole decade later. And then there was a track, Elefante, which had never been played before ever, which was kind of new for us. So it really, like you said, it kind of runs the gamut on our sound, both sonically and just, you know, on a chronological basis.
Yeah, I was going to ask too, let's dig a little bit deeper about sonically, because most people, when they hear that you're a funk band, they think of, you know, Parliament Funkadelic, or they think of, other funk outfits like that. But this is a little bit deeper. How do you guys determine, like, what style of song is going to be presented? Because there are so many different things. Besides, I mean, there's a few tracks here that are just, if you guys weren't a jam band and people heard Beanstalk, they would think immediately that you were. But like what, how do you guys determine, how Distant Times sounds so different from Tsukasa? Is that something that you do together, the chord changes, all of that? Or is it just something that comes together and you're just belting out lyrics as you go?
It's really, all our songs, you know, have a different, like, upbringing, different. I mean, every song has a unique story behind it, like whether vocally, like lyrically, and also like how the song came to life, whether it was spontaneously composed on the fly in practice or on stage, you know, or someone wrote out a lot of the parts at home. You know, every song is a different story. And we really, you know, one thing about our band is we try to really like not limit ourselves to any sort of genre or particular label and play whatever we're feeling, you know. And I mean, we try to keep things groovy and dancey. That's like the one common ground between 90% of our music. But, you know, we really like dabbling in different styles and, you know, changing it up when we can and when it makes sense.
Greg, from a vocal perspective, there are obviously huge vocal lines that you have to master for the performing these songs, but there's also raps that you have to do. Is it hard to go from, you know, being able to sing then to do, you know, that rap and Lost in Line? Like it must be tricky for you vocally to be able to switch all the time while you're playing.
This album definitely has a lot of different vocal styles going on. And I mean, like we space it out throughout the day. So I know like I'm going to be hitting it hard vocally at this time, but then later maybe I'll be doing a rap. And I mean, it just kind of, as far as that whole section kind of goes in that song Lost in Line, like it just felt really fitting to have a rap in there. And I also, you know, I think some of what I've been listening to in that time period kind of seeped into my mind. And that kind of goes back to your last thought about different genres. Like if we go out to a concert that we love just as attendees, that like style might like find its way subconsciously into the next song. And that's, you know, we try to be sponges when we're out and about. And for me, lyrically, I kind of live my life as a sponge, because if I hear a phrase or say a phrase or stumbled on a couple words or a word, you know, it finds its way onto the page, or in these days, the iPhone notepad. But you know, it's not that hard to switch styles, because I know the songs very well and I know it's coming. It is more challenging to, like, as you said, kind of belt it out for days on end. So when we're in the studio, I actually, before we even get into the studio for vocals, I give each song or each segment of a song kind of like a difficulty grade, out of 1, 2, or 3. And I try to like plan my studio days in a logical way where I could start with a nice 2 while my voice is fresh. And then once I'm really warmed up after lunch, I'll go for like a really tough like 3 to really just let it rip. And if I have anything left in the tank, a nice 1 might close out the day, because it's not, you know, but sometimes, again, with the pandemic, it afforded us so much time that normally if I had done a difficulty 2 and then a difficulty 3 and we had the 1 left and I start singing and it felt a little like I could use a couple days of rest, normally, because we're on tour and we don't have so much time, I would just sing the 1, the difficulty 1. But this time, if it was a little scratchy, like, we had the luxury of saying, you know what, go home, sleep for get good sleep for a couple days. Let's just hit this in a few days. And I think as a result, I'm very proud of the vocals and all of the music and all of the solos and all the nooks and crannies and added elements. I mean, we really, like Jeremy said, we really took our time, and that was a luxury.
And you get to channel Bootsy Collins in some of the places. Like, I think it's Elefante where you kind of channel Bootsy a little bit, right? With some of those.
Okay. That's cool. I hadn't thought of that, but I hear what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely took some swings on this album, and I'm happy with it. You know, Bootsy definitely took some swings in his day, and it worked out. But you know, I won't be wearing those crazy sunglasses anytime soon.
Yeah, how did you guys hook up with "Here Come the Mummies"? At least the horn section, because they're so prominent, and I know you guys have played with other horn sections in the past that may or may not still be viable in other bands. But how did you hook up with "Here Come the Mummies" horn section?
Well, we first linked up with them actually at summer camp to actually record filming music video for our song "King Kong," which we had them record on. And I think we sort of very randomly connected with them prior to that, which started the whole conversation, possibly even over Instagram. And we just started talking about collabs, and the next thing you know, they're recording horns for us, and then we made a music video.
Yeah, we saw them at a festival and we started listening to their music. We think they're so fun and funny and so super talented, and I think Jeremy's right, we might have just slid into their DMs, and they've been so incredible to work with. They're all so talented, and we've had them sit in with us. They were at our New Year's Eve show this past year, and it's been incredible. We find ourselves very fortunate to be able to go to a concert, be blown away by the musicians, and then next thing we know, they're on our album and we're friends and we're talking. I mean, we did that not only with "Here Come the Mummies," but throughout the album, you know, we've been fans of ALO for years and years. And we've had the opportunity of jamming with Lebo, their guitarist, a number of times, who we met through the amazing photographer Jay Blakesburg, who has connected us with a number of people. But we never really got to hang with Zach, their keyboardist, much, their pianist, multi-instrumentalist. Mm-hmm. But through, you know, friends, and I think Jeremy might have done a digital thing with him over the pandemic, we were able to hit him up. And he's like, yeah, I also am sitting at home itching to play and missing shows. I would love to collaborate. And we had a great session virtually where we kind of decided how he could take our song Indiglow to the next level.
Yeah. I was going to ask about Indiglow. Is he playing Wurlitzer or is he playing Fender? It sounds more like Wurlitzer than Fender, but do you know what he's playing on that?
I think he was playing a Rhodes.
He was playing a Rhodes.
Because I remember him talking about having to get it repaired. But it was played through an amp with a little grit, so it had somewhat of a Wurlitzer vibe.
Right, right. That's why I was confused. I still think Rhodes is the best electric piano sound that there is. It must be thrilling for you guys to play with or to have Zach Gill on the record, but also Jason Hahn, who's been a veteran of this scene for so long, and certainly move like that wouldn't move like that without the percussion from Jason, right?
Absolutely. You had that one locked and loaded.
I know, man.
That was great.
Yeah, so tell me about how that came together and how much he adds to that tune.
I mean, when we were working on the mix for that song, you know, we were all thinking like, this sounds great, but it needs something. And we started toying around with ideas, and then we realized, you know, this needs percussion. And so immediately we're like, hey, let's see if Jason's available. Like, you know, we've been talking to him about doing a collab for a while, and this seemed like the perfect opportunity to just go for it.
Jeremy, I'm curious from your perspective, how well you think Greg has grown into the role as, you know, front man, because he really is. This band's a lot of fun, and you guys shred and you have great time on stage. But Greg as a front man is really key to the band's success at this point, right? I mean, he's sort of the master of the ceremony for what you guys are doing out there when you're performing live. How critical is it for Greg to be up front and excited to go to work every day?
It's absolutely 100% critical. You know, I mean, our shows are all about the energy, and you know, if we aren't up on stage and I introduced a band, it wouldn't go so well. And you know, it would be kind of boring, kind of lame. Yeah. If I was singing the songs, people might leave. Some people want me to sing, but it's not a great idea. But it's absolutely crucial. You know, I mean, I feel we're very lucky as a band to have Greg up there holding it down, you know, with the vocals, guitar, and the banter. I mean, banter is hard. You know, it's actually a skill. It's not just, you just don't just go up on the mic and start talking and the audience responds. It requires some knowledge of and like ability of how to really effectively do that.
And Greg, from your perspective, you know, you've known all along that Jeremy's a great guitar player, but seeing him now shred at festivals with other bands and getting the recognition as one of the real great established guitar players in the community now. I mean, it's he can do virtually anything, and it's not just about the sound that you guys make, but he really does when he guests with people at festivals. He takes many of performances to another level. How has it been for you to watch his growth as a player and as a player who can do so many different things?
Oh man, well I love watching Jeremy sit in with other bands, because normally I'm pretty busy when he's playing with us, where I can't really just like take it in. And I think I probably speak for a lot of band members when you see someone on stage rip, and you know, Jeremy doesn't just shred, like, you know, he's not one of the kids who just sat in his room and practiced technique. I mean, he really plays intentionally. He's got big open ears listening to the band around him to make sure that what he's playing isn't just like, you know, for lack of a better word, like guitar masturbation. He's just like, he's elevating the music and making very tasteful, logical choices to serve the song. He's never serving himself. He's serving the song. And he does that in our band every show, every song. He's constantly, you know, thinking about the big picture. But what I was going to say is I think whenever someone who's a musician is watching someone just crush on stage, you're always like, man, I wish I could play with him, or I wish he was in my band. And that's why I love watching him sit in with people, because he is in my band. And I'm like, man, like, this guy's in our band. That's amazing. I mean, I feel that way with all of our bandmates. Like, whenever our drummer sits in with someone, I'm like, God, that guy rips. It would be so cool. Wait, No, it is so cool. He is in the band. That's our guy. We got to lock him down. But yeah, I mean, I think since the start, like, Jeremy's been kind of like my guitar teacher from the get-go, and like really one of my favorite guitarists in the scene, regardless that he's in our band. And from the start, he's always served the greater purpose, and he doesn't just, you know, he's never like taking a solo just cause. He's taking a solo to lift the moment into the next one. And he has he's done all of the work at home and continues to work constantly on his craft. And he has the foresight to lead it right into the next section.
Who puts the set list together before you guys go out there? Do you do it just by computer, or do each of you sit down? Do you trade off? How do the set lists come together each night?
We have this pool of manatees with these bubbles that have songs, and they pick each song. Now, for anyone who hasn't seen that South Park, you should see that South Park. It's a really carefully thought out process, you know, before every show. That can sometimes be really easy. Like, it'll just come together. Other times we'll be like staring at the set list and until like 5 minutes before we get on stage. But you know, a lot goes into every set list. You know, as you know, every show has to be 100% unique for us. You know, that's one of our things, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll never repeat a set. So every set has to be fresh. You know, we try to really change it up as much as we can, as often as we can, like try new transitions and new jam ideas, and we mix it up. So like, if someone's seeing us two nights in Boston, you know, obviously they're going to get two completely unique shows, but they're not only that, they're also going to get unique shows from the last time we were in Boston, right, or the last time we were in Portland, Maine nearby. So there's a lot of factors that go into a set list, but none of them are rules. And, you know, sometimes we'll decide, like, we really want to play the song, even if we play it the night before, because whatever, we're just feeling it again. And it's really a fun thing for us, you know, because anything goes for the most part.
Right. How do you guys come up with what covers you're going to do? Because I noticed back in March, and we actually played it on our show Live 5 last week or the week before, we played All Mixed Up. And that's a song that hasn't been in rotation in a while. It's something that I think you guys have played before, but only brought back recently, or only brought back that at that show. How do you determine what covers you're going to play? And specifically, how did you choose that one? Because it just seems like a perfect song for you guys.
Well, one of the cool things about putting set lists together is sometimes there's like exterior influence that is really helpful. And we played that 311 song on 311 day, right, March 11th. And, you know, so, like Jeremy said, sometimes we're always thinking about what we played last time or the time before and what we played yesterday and what we're going to maybe play tomorrow. If they're, you know, because people were fortunate to have fans who go to every show on a run or sometimes a whole tour. And we want to keep it fresh for those people as well as the ones coming out for the first time. But when it was 311 day, we had to pay tribute to one of our like OG favorite bands. And we couldn't, you know, we have a nice like kind of document, like a living document of all the set lists we've ever played, starting at a certain point when we started to take it a little more seriously. But that we couldn't find when we played All Mixed Up. We think it was maybe 2008 or 2009 before we had a great record of all of our set lists. So that was a blast from the past. And, you know, similarly, we were just in Boston, and this was just a few days after, unfortunately, Taylor Hawkins had passed. And we, you know, after that happened, we were texting each other how sad it was. And I was like, we should maybe consider playing a Foo Fighters song in Boston. And we hadn't played Foo Fighters before and chatted about what to try. And we ended up playing Learn to Fly for the first time. And that's just another example of how, you know, sometimes what's going on in the world or what city you're in or what the venue looks like. You know, sometimes we'll walk into a venue and be like, oh man, this kind of reminds me of a scene from that movie. We should play this one. And that's really exciting because, like Jeremy said, when you're writing set lists like night in and night out, sometimes you hit a wall of, and you need like you need a little oomph through some writer's block. And it's great when the venue or the circumstances help dictate, you know, where we should maybe go. And then sometimes if it's too obvious, we go in the opposite direction, you know, so we can't play the expected.
You're on tour. It's a busy tour. Obviously, you want to be out there as much as you can. You're playing lots of dates, but you're also playing festivals. Of course, your Dome Fest is coming up May 19th through the 21st in Thornville, Ohio. Are you guys already planning lots of fun stuff that, you know, you may not have been able to do the last couple of years with Dome Fest? You have some plans that have had to be shelved for Dome Fest of past?
Absolutely. You know, Dome Fest is, it's one of those things where as soon as we're done at Dome Fest, the ideas start pouring in for the next one. You know, whether it be fun themes, fun installations, fun sets, fun extra covers, fun concepts to kind of pull off. And we have a lot in store for this year, and we're beyond excited to take the real deal to Legend Valley this year.
Guys, I'm so so happy for your success and really psyched about Perspective. Thanks so much, Greg, as always, for taking the time to talk about us and talk to us. And Jeremy, thanks for joining him today. Guys, continued success, and we'll see you out there on the road, okay?
Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, man. We'll see you soon.
For more on the band, including tour info, visit pigeonsplayingpingpong.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Perspective. Here is Surreal.
Of the sky.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.